Required. I think it's...
Can we be clear on something before we move on? It is GIFs, okay?
Sure.
GIFs. GIFs.
I think why GIFs, the data is interesting GIFs. To Facebook... Hello, listeners, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of Bad Voltage.
Yeah.
Everyone have a nice holiday and ready for a great show?
Absolutely.
I'm ready.
So I do want to start out with a follow-up from last show in which we asked listeners to guess my middle name. Now, one person guessed Linux Questions, which is close. My parents did almost choose that. So the closest was actually Jeremy Algeron Winston Spencer Churchill Palmerston Disraeli Razzmatazz, which surprisingly close, and yet no cigar. So no LQ t-shirt will be given away. But as a consolation prize, I believe we have some comical news stories for you.
Now, hang on a second. Are you actually going to tell us your middle name?
No.
Or are you just going to be a tease?
Yeah, no. I'm going to go ahead and not do that.
You're an objectively horrible person.
Yes.
I can exclusively reveal two things. The first one is that if you change your middle name to Razzmatazz, I will pay you $100. And secondly...
I am tempted by this offer.
And secondly, I can exclusively reveal that Jeremy Garcia's middle name is, in fact, Garcia, ironically enough.
Perhaps.
By the way, Jeremy, you should deeply consider changing your name just because getting money out of language is like getting blood out of a rock.
Hi.
As we discovered in our pre-recording conversation about his lack of AC and his unwillingness to buy it.
This is especially
correct. It's 500 quid.
He's so tight.
He says, sweating anyway. Profusely.
Well, right. I'm not disagreeing with you. It is very hot.
Right. Yes. Anyway, let's get on to some funny stuff. So what have we got? What have we got first?
Well, honestly, the first one, did you see there's a thing in Bolivia where a group of brothers, they were 8, 10 and 12, I believe, captured a black widow spider and deliberately had it bite them because they thought they'd get Spider-Man powers.
That is why.
Is amazing.
Well...
was this a scientific experiment? Is this the Mayo Clinic? Like, what is this?
Well, I believe that all the rest of the world are the control in this experiment.
Everyone knows only the Kauai cave spider does this, so I don't know what they were thinking.
The fools. But this, I think, neatly plays into another thing, which is that North Korea have officially admitted that Kim Il-sung did not have magical powers. Right, there's a bunch of really serious kind of po-faced speculation in this news article about how it's an attempt by Kim Jong-un to undeify the founders in order to more approach the modern world and everything. But then they headline the article, North Korea founder Kim Il-sung did not have the ability to teleport, state media admits.
Sounds like an elaborate ruse.
Presumably because he failed to find a spider to bite him.
It's such a shame that North Korea is both so funny and so sad at the same time, you know? It's that you hear this ridiculousness that happens over there, and then you're like, but these poor people are in this horrible situation, right? It's just...
Yeah,
it's like a great joke with a really sad punchline. you know... Anyway,
well,
what a bummer.
It is. A slightly more cheery thing that I want to put out. There's a website called thiswebsitewillselfdestruct.com. And
did you click on it?
I did. And it didn't self-destruct. What it is you can go in there and type in a message, which is saved on the website anonymously, and you can read through a bunch of messages that people have left. And if it ever goes 24 hours without anybody sending a message, it gets deleted. Database and everything, it all gets lost. I thought it was really interesting.
So they tell you.
Well, I thought it was a really interesting kind of social experiment, you know?
Hang on a second. So everything. So people can go and do what on the website?
Just leave a message which other people on the site can read.
It's a self-destructing forum, basically.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And then the final thing was we asked people about ridiculous names because Elon Musk, you saw that Musk's name, Elon Musk and Grimes' new child was named X and then the AE Ash character and then A-12. It's now been changed to X Ash A-XII, which according to Grimes is because Roman numerals look better, but the rumour is that California don't allow you to put numbers in your name and that's why they changed it. But we asked about a bunch of other ridiculous names and Mr. Bacon, perhaps the Bad Vulture community have utterly come through for us on this.
Now, hang on a sec. Before we get onto these suggestions, can we just dwell for a moment on how stupid this name is for Elon Musk and whoever the hell Grimes is? Apparently, it's some famous musician I've never heard of. But why on earth did they call their child this? Do we know?
We do know. The Ash character is the elven spelling of AI for artificial intelligence. X stands for the unknown variable. It's just obvious.
Seems reasonable. Okay, so better than David, I guess. Sarah or something. Anyway, all right, so let's go back to the Bad Voltage community suggestions because it's making me mad about Elon Musk's child's name. Dave Wickham apparently had a schoolmate called Obviously.
And to be clear, this is not someone called Lee who everyone nicknamed Obvious. This is someone whose surname was Lee and his first name was Obvious.
Just honestly fantastic.
He swears. We're only retailing what we were told, but he says so on Twitter. You can check it out.
Rob talked about Khaleesi. Who's Khaleesi? Hang on, who's Khaleesi's?
I mean, I imagine after Game of Thrones, a whole bunch
of this is loads of people calling their kid Khaleesi. This is not a famous person's kid. This is just people calling their child Khaleesi after Daenerys.
From Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, yes.
Khaleesi. Frippet1 says Jamie Oliver's kid is called River Rocket. I have many comments about this, but I'm not going to say any of them. Ian says that Nicolas Cage's kid is Kal-El from Superman.
Superman's real name, yes.
Yep. Penn Jillette, who I'm a huge fan of, apparently Penn Jillette's kid is called Moxie Crime Fighter, which...
Yep.
That's just objectively good.
Yeah, I kind of dig that.
It's a very, very Penn Jillette thing to do, I think.
It is. By the way, if anyone hasn't seen the Penn and Teller show bullshit, you should go and watch it. It's brilliant. Possessor says Sweden has a law about this.
About naming people. Yeah, he quoted a whole bunch of stuff about how you can't do this. This is on the Slack channel. Uh-huh. Really interesting.
I didn't see that. That's very interesting. Maybe California and the broader the US should have more of a law to stop people naming their children after Roman numerals. Chris Coldplay Martin's daughter is called Apple, which I actually don't think is that big of a deal. I know someone called Apple.
Do you?
But
you didn't meet them in Northallerton.
They're admittedly not from Northallerton. And Matt asks what mocking people's names has got anything to do with the tech podcast. It's got nothing to do with the tech podcast, in fact. It's got everything to do with the fact that we are three children on a tech podcast. It's the reason why. So stupid names. Thank you, Bad Voltage community, for feeding in your information where it matters the most, which is stupid names.
Let's appreciate this. So, and thank you very much in particular to Jeremy Moxie Crime Fighter Garcia for filling those things in.
So let's talk about some more serious stuff. What's been going on with GitLab then?
Jeremy, do you want to introduce this? This I thought was interesting.
Sure. So it looks like they kind of spearfished their own employees as just a test, as kind of on the sec team. And the results were a little bit unsurprising, I think. Not good, but worse than I maybe would have suspected. So of the 50 phishing emails delivered, 17 recipients clicked on the provided link. Of those 17, 10 of them attempted to authenticate to the fake site. And out of those 50, only 6 reported this suspicious email to the SecOp teams who had actually sent it. Amusingly, those that did enter their credentials were redirected to the GitLab handbook. So is this is this surprising to either of you, or what are your thoughts here?
I was a little bit surprised, I'll be honest with you. I mean, they did quite a good, the SecOps team did quite a good job of setting up something that looked plausible. Nothing that an outside attacker couldn't do, but they registered like gitlab.company, if I remember rightly, or something like that. You know, a plausible looking outside URL. But do you buy these things? I mean, this is to some extent a self-fulfilling thing, right? Because I think, well, I never click on any of these mails, but what that possibly means is I click on loads of them and just don't notice that I've done so.
Right. But, I don't know. I mean, this doesn't massively surprise me. I mean, this is just a human being thing, right? Is that everyone's got a different radar for these kinds of things, you know?
But if we're suggesting that a third of people who work for GitLab, and these are technically adept people, it wasn't done to non-technical people who just happened to work for GitLab. It was sent to technically adept, technically aware people, not someone who you have to explain what spear phishing means as a concept.
Yes.
And a third of them fell for it, right? Is there anything we can do about this? Was it just, you know?
What's more surprising, and I've said this before about GitLab, is their level of openness and transparency. I love the fact that they talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Who else would do this? Who else would share that? That's a pretty vulnerable thing to share with the world.
Yes.
Literally.
I don't know. I mean, it's a vulnerable thing if you know about it and the world doesn't. But you don't think that a bunch of people are going to go, ha-ha, GitLab people are uniquely vulnerable to this. And they're all super-duper alert to it now. So it's actually done a fantastic job of training their employees to not be vulnerable to it by going, you were.
I don't mean vulnerable in terms of the attack. I just mean in terms of sharing your weaknesses.
Well, yeah, true, I suppose.
Most businesses do not share. How many businesses have you ever seen that have shared this level of kind of transparency around a weakness?
I agree with you. It's pretty impressive. Google do it for postmortems, not at this kind of level, but they do talk about what went wrong and how it happened and so on. And I really wish companies did more of it because there's.
I love it.
It's the idea that you somehow look bad by sharing this is terrible and wrong.
Well, what's also interesting to me is that people in like management books and seminars, and they always talk about like embracing failure and speaking openly, but not as many people who read the books do that. So kudos, you know.
But that's literally because the first time you fire someone because they did a thing wrong, no one ever trusts you about embracing failure ever, ever again.
Yeah. You gotta integrate it across the whole thing, don't you?
And it never happens. Literally, the first time someone gets an undeserved kicking for a thing that their boss did, that's the end of your embrace failure policy.
Yep. I wouldn't be that blunt, but yeah, the gist of what you're saying, I agree with. Yeah. So what
else do we have Facebook on the news agenda? Yeah.
Facebook bought Giphy.
They did.
Yeah. Now, I personally don't really care at all about this. It's like, whatever. But I know a lot of people are worried about Instagram being just completely inundated with animated GIFs now. So
I think the interesting thing here is, a couple things that I was surprised at. Facebook claimed that 50% of Giphy's traffic already came from Facebook, if you include Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, and WhatsApp, which seemed high to me. They raised over $150 million, which, given what they do, seems a little surprising to me. Right. That was
surprising. 150.
Yes. But where I think this
sadly,
is
at this point, nothing surprises.
Going to be interesting for Facebook as a company is not sharing GIFs, because I mean they could have built this fairly easily, right? Google has a competitor already that they acquired. I think it's
Can we be clear on something before we move on? It is GIFs, okay?
Sure.
GIFs. GIFs.
I think why GIFs, the data is interesting GIFs to Facebook, because you can implement the image that shall not be named ease API in a secure way, like Signal proxies it in a way that you cannot get any useful data on. What I think is going to be interesting from Facebook's perspective is if they can convince all new apps to use it because it's the easiest default, they will get real-time insight into which apps are becoming popular and coming out of left field before almost anyone else. And that's where I think the data for them is going to be interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
And realistically, what the company did was about 1% being an image hosting service and 99% being really quite good at convincing people to integrate it. So almost every chat application and forum, whatever, have some way of posting animated GIF because people like doing it. And almost all of them have integrated GIFy search to do so.
Yeah, much more than Tenor, for sure.
Yes. So they've done a really good job of getting themselves embedded in other people's apps, which
will
is what
the
people
companies
are buying,
feel right? The same now that it isn't a small independent company and it is Facebook.
Yeah, but it's a lot harder to take it out. If I was Tenor, I'd say, okay, here is a literal copy of the Giphy API. You have to change nothing other than the line at the top which says Giphy.com.
But I think
change
people that are going to be reticent to give that data to Facebook will also be reticent to give that data to Google.
True, I suppose.
So will another one of these engines spring up that is a third party? It'll be curious to see.
Unfortunately, I bet 100 of them will spring up, none of which will get any traction at all.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I agree with you.
And our last thing is something which we don't necessarily want to go into in depth now. But did you see that Joe Rogan, who does podcasts, which is apparently quite popular, has now gone exclusively to doing it on Spotify?
Yeah. Yep.
Including removing, as of September, his entire back catalog from YouTube.
This is kind of a big deal. It was like $100 million deal or something like that, right?
Yes.
Because he wasn't on Spotify, if I remember right.
He was
because
not.
He said that it didn't pay enough.
All the best podcasts are not on Spotify, I should point out.
And Spotify is on quite an acquisition tear here, right? They bought Gimlet, which is a podcast network. They bought The Ringer, which is also a podcast network. They bought Anchor, which is some tooling around it. Now this, they're spending a pretty substantial amount of money on podcasts. I will be curious to watch if they keep all these open and via RSS, or if they lock some of them down to just the Spotify player. Will be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens here. I think it was really smart of them to go after Joe Rogan, because he is, I think, first of all, he's got a super popular podcast, but secondly, he's become like a bit of a member of the zeitgeist, I would say. Like, people often reference Joe Rogan interviews because he has such a diverse range of guests on there. So I think not just the fact that the podcast is popular, but the association with Joe Rogan with all spheres. It's not like you go and get, you know, buy The Blaze, which is a very conservative show, or you go and buy a liberal network or a sports network or whatever it might be. He kind of covers, he has sports people on there, politicians, people from all sides of the political divide. So it's kind of an interesting move for them to take, I think, having his show on there. I'm just surprised he went. But I think he's been increasingly frustrated with YouTube.
So I'll admit I don't listen to Joe Rogan. The curious thing here for me is I thought it was a video podcast. So going to an audio-only service is an interesting one.
It's not going to be.
He's got a video, but it's a camera pointed at the two of them talking in a radio station.
Maybe it's just me, but by far the most popular Joe Rogan thing I've ever seen is Elon Musk lighting up on the show, which doesn't really translate to audio.
Well, and he's moving video to Spotify too. It's not just audio.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think Spotify did video.
Yeah, I didn't think that they did. Although they do, because if you use the Spotify app and you play some songs, it plays you the music video on the app. So I think that they're not particularly massively set up for video right now. I think they just do music videos here and there. But I'm pretty sure, because I listened to it, the one clip that he posted to Spotify announcing the move, and I think he said that it's going to be video and audio, which is interesting.
Well, the interesting thing about this is this whole kind of exclusivity deal inspires a whole bunch of feelings in people, I think, whether it's Joe Rogan going exclusively to Spotify or games being available exclusively on the Epic Store or whatever. And
yeah.
I feel like we ought to address this in a bit more detail. So I'd like to make it the main topic for the next show.
Yes.
Sounds like I agree. An There's excellent so much, idea.
So much meat on that bone and so many ways in which our lovely Bad Voltage community could feed into it as well. So
stay tuned next show for this exclusively.
Only on Bad Voltage. All right, so recently, many of you may have seen, or some of you may have seen, that there was a video posted with the Unreal Engine version 5. And this is quite interesting, I think, for a few different reasons. One is that this engine was classic demo, right? It showed off, in this case, it was kind of a woman running through a cave, and it was showing all of this new technology that they've built into the Unreal Engine, which I'll get to in a second. But also it was showing this demo running on a PlayStation 5, which is an upcoming games console that is anticipated to be announced in June and coming out later this year. So we wanted to talk about this a little bit because, sure, PS5's coming out. That's kind of interesting in some ways. But what's kind of more interesting is some of the claims that are being made about the Unreal demo. Okay. So I'm going to provide a quick overview of what this is. Did you guys see this? Did you watch the video?
Yeah,
I did.
Were you impressed?
I'm more impressed that they keep thinking up environments. It's like, oh, they're running past a lake of quicksilver. Amazing. know.
So while not unimpressed, if I remember the Unreal 3 and then Unreal 4 demos, Epic is kind of famous for building demos that maybe the last game ever built on the engine is that good years after the demo. So being impressed with the demo and being impressed with the games are,
right.
are not necessarily the same thing.
And we will get to that particular avenue of criticism later on. So, in a nutshell, to provide a quick overview for those of you who didn't see this, this demo does look, it's breathtaking to look at. It looks, I wouldn't necessarily say that it looks photorealistic, but it's not far off in terms of how visually beautiful it looks.
Yeah, pretty close.
And what they did is they introduced a couple of technologies in it. One is called Nanite. And I'm going to read this from the website. And then we can discuss it. But Nanite is a virtualized micro-polygon geometry that frees artists to create as much geometric detail as the eye can see. So Nanite virtualized geometry means that film-quality source art comprising of hundreds of millions or billions of polygons can be imported directly into Unreal Engine, and it just works. So the basic gist of this is games are getting so high quality now, and of course, particularly on the PC, you have games that need to work from low graphics capabilities up to ultra. So what they're tending to use is these super high quality meshes, right? So if you have a picture of someone, like a mesh of a statue, for example, and it might have billions of triangles that make it up, typically an artist will have to manually convert that down to a model that can be then used in a game for both space reasons and so it can actually, you know, work at 30 frames per second, 60 frames per second, whatever. So Unreal are claiming that Nanite will do that for you. You just load in the raw thing and it'll optimize it for you, which sounds impressive.
Importantly, as I understand it, and I might be understanding this wrong, what they're claiming is not just that it will do it, it's that it will do it on the fly. Right?
It does it in real time.
That's exactly the point. I mean, before, when you say artists were doing it manually, they were. But it's not like they had to individually go through and delete 2 out of 3 of the triangles, right? You picked Simplify Model in Blender and then tweaked the result or something. It's not like they were individually
doing it
by hand.
That's not what they had to do. A lot of them had to do it by hand.
Well, I think the distinction is if you just have the simplifier do it, then it doesn't make it as good. This is the same as when you're making pixel art icons and stuff like that. You can't just do the 16 pixel reduced version. It basically needs redrawing so all the lines are at 45 degrees and stuff. So yeah, but this is
exactly. Yeah.
But the point is that it was I'll do five versions of this process, like icon creation. And now it's just give it to Nanite or give it to Unreal Engine and Nanite does it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's so apparently this is the view. And I obviously saw the demo and some of the follow-up demo, but I've actually watched, I did some reading on like some game developers reacting to it. And they said like, this is pretty huge because the ideal situation is you want to load high quality assets into a game. And then you want the engine to figure as much of this stuff out as possible. So you're not having to manually scrub things. So it can run in the game. So they said that this is a pretty big deal. Now, again, the caveat, maybe this won't be as good as we think it is. This is a demo, okay? And it's not going to come out until 2021. So anyway, the other technology that they talked about is called Lumen. And Lumen is a fully dynamic global illumination solution. Okay. That immediately reacts to scene and light changes. So basically, they say that the system renders diffuse into reflection with infinite bounces and indirect specular reflections in huge detailed environments and scales ranging from kilometers to millimeters. So from what I can tell, the basic gist is that when people would want to do like really clever kind of lighting, they'd have to kind of bake that into the textures for the games. So then they you know, depending on how the scene is rendered, these clever lighting tricks were kind of faked using these textures. And the basic gist of it is that Lumen will do that for you again.
This is the thing.
Light is obviously incredibly processor intensive.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the thing that I didn't quite understand because my understanding of this, which is not very far understanding, and I'd be happy to be corrected on it, is that, yeah, you can speed up the calculations that you're doing by having a faster GPU, and you can speed up to some extent by having cleverer algorithms. But there's only so much you can do if you're trying to calculate this stuff. Right? It just takes a long time. So I don't get what it is they've done that's a quantum leap over everything previously, whether it's a cleverer algorithm or whether they've worked out a way of not having to do half the calculations and fake it on the fly or what. And I tried drilling into this and couldn't really get it, at least partially because if someone gave me a really good explanation, I probably wouldn't understand it. So
when I got to no baking a normal map and no authoring of LODs, I will admit I was slightly lost. Although looking at one of the older demos, they seem to tout the exact same thing with less triangles. So
yeah.
Did you notice that?
Well,
I went back and watched the Unreal 3 and 4 demos just out of curiosity.
We will get onto this. The washing powder that washes whiter than anyone has ever washed before, including the last one that we also claim that about.
Right. So what I think is interesting is this is not just a more visually more beautiful. You're always going to get more visually beautiful, capabilities in games, of course, and game engines. I think what is interesting is that they claim that this is going to significantly impact the game development creation process. The other thing that they touched on, which is not linked into the blog post, but they mentioned in the video, was around the use of convolution reverb for the audio pieces. Is that, again, typically what would happen is with audio, you'd need to essentially bake in a model into the scene. And consequently, the realism is not as real, right? Because if you're stood in a cave, the reverb that you've got will be modeled on a completely different shaped room. It might be a square room, whereas in a cave, you've got all these weird angles and everything, and it does impact the realism. Our brains kind of notice this stuff. This has just been well known in audio circles for years. So that when you listen to the demo, when you watch this Unreal Engine 5 demo, the audio is mind-blowing if you listen to it on headphones. It is really impressive. It does feel like you're there. And they claim that basically, if I remember correctly, that, for example, they'd be able to calculate the reverb for each individual raindrop in that cave, as opposed to just a pre-baked, this is the reverb for all the rain. Now, all of this sounds too fantastical to be true to me.
That didn't sound like hyperbole to you in any way.
Hey, as Adam Sweet once mentioned, it's pronounced hyperbole.
But yes, so, okay, let's assume that I'll spot you for the moment that we buy all these marketing lies from the Unreal team. Carry on.
Now, the other thing as well to touch on, and then we'll get into it, is the PS5 piece. And then I kind of want to talk about what we all think of this. There's a bit at the end of the demo where the woman is going through the cave and she unlocks this mythical thing. And this big kind of big space opens up. And she then flies through the air to this space. And one of the points that they make in the demo is that the SSD, which is going to be in the PS5, which I'll summarize in a second, is one of the reasons why this is possible. Because they're basically able to load these super like high-end assets from movies, render them using Nanite, right? But they're able to pull that data so quickly from the SSD because the PS5 is basically having a completely new SSD that's going to be baked into the system where they've essentially had to rewire the chipset to pull data as quickly from it. So the idea being, if you're, for example, in a game and you're looking at the exact view that you're looking at right now, which is, let's say, looking down through the cave, that the SSD, as you move it, will load all the assets for just the view you're looking at instead of having to pull assets, dump them into memory so they're sitting there to be potentially used later on. It's literally fast enough that it can pull the assets as you're moving the viewport that the character's looking at. So the point that they make in the Unreal demo is because the SSD is so fast and because they can bake all of these movie level assets down using Lumen, you get this ridiculously high quality scene with a combination of those two technologies, which is kind of interesting. So...
I grant you this all sounds terribly clever. It does, actually. I did read an article which was on Tom's Hardware saying, yeah, all this stuff runs on PC as well, you know.
Right.
So yeah. I don't know how special the PS5 stuff is, at least partially because it's not like the old days, right? A console now is just basically a high-end gaming PC. And it's not like they're inventing custom technology to go in it most of the time. There's nothing stopping you building.
That's not true.
No, they really got away from that. Like the PS3 with the cell processor and everything was super right. unique. I think exactly. they realized that development for those platforms was such a hassle and
exactly.
kept changing yes. every generation that now they have moved much more towards
yes,
commodity.
Yes, so there's nothing stopping you. And I say, because they're not using completely custom and only available to them components, you can go and build yourself a gaming PC which contains. So the magic new SSD thing, it's not like you're not going to be able to buy it unless you buy a PS5 and tear the PS5 apart.
Right.
You know.
Right, but you can say that about anything.
Yeah,
you can say that about any technology. Like that you will
absolutely.
Get that. The point is that what they did do that's custom in the PS5 with the SSD, which I think is kind of interesting, is that to hit the throughput that they were looking for, which is 5.5 gigabytes a second, they had to basically rebuild the chipset in the PS5 because with a typical bus, they couldn't pull the data off that quickly. And that was new to it. But it's not like that technology is not going to go to PCs. Of course it is, right, at some point.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's interesting to talk about this in conjunction with the PS5 launch and everything. And
right.
Half the point of a console is that it's embodying the latest and best of gaming PC technology inside a conveniently purchasable box for $350, not $3,050. Right.
So what's interesting to me about this is this notion. Let's assume, again, for the sake of argument, that the good people at Unreal and at Sony are not full of shit, right? If we assume that, the notion that essentially load times are pretty much eradicated because you only have to pull in the data for that specific scene, right? That's what they're basically, what Sony are saying is that load times basically go away. You can create infinite open world environments because you're no longer having to pull that data off because historically, I mean, first of all, Blu-ray discs are super slow, but even with a hard drive, if you, for example, have a city block, to get the data off the hard drive quickly enough, you'd often have to have duplication of assets, things like mailboxes, in multiple places on the disc because you couldn't get it off fast enough because it's scattered around in different parts of the disc. You don't have those kinds of seek times on an SSD. If you've got that combination of being able to use the level of assets that Unreal talk about and you don't have load times, that could have a remarkable impact on video games.
Not having any load times would do. If I thought for one tiny second that was going to happen. And the reason I don't think it will do is, imagine I buy everything about that, right? You can now load the assets you need from the disk in real time.
Yeah.
You don't have to preload a bunch of them in order to cache them in memory, which means that, you know, every few minutes you find yourself getting into a lift and going up a floor, which is a secret, right. Which is a secret way of just hiding the loading.
Just loading shit in.
Yeah. So you don't need all of that. Imagine I buy all of that. What then happens is everyone developing games goes, well, now we can do five times as much data because everyone's basically used to 2 or 3 seconds loading time anyway. Ask yourself, right? Every time someone brings out a new computer of any kind, it's more powerful than the previous one. It's faster than the previous one, right? So
right.
Your desktop, does it seem significantly faster to you than a Windows 95 desktop did in 1995? No.
Of course not, but you're comparing completely different things.
I absolutely disagree.
You're comparing the state of what technology can do today compared to what it could do back in 1995.
He's saying is it doesn't get faster, it just ends up doing more.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. What happens is
sure.
when you get faster load times, no one uses this to actually load faster. They use it to load twice as much stuff in the same amount of time.
Well, the thing is that I think a comparison will be, would your Windows 95 installation run faster? Assuming that it could actually harness using all the technology that we've got today, sure, it would be blazing quick.
Yeah.
But the point is that technology, yeah, people add more stuff into
it. And that's exactly the point.
I agree with you.
But yeah, I will completely buy. In the same way that if Microsoft had never done anything with Windows other than what Windows 95 did, it'd now be super duper incredifast. But when you give people increased loading times, what they do with it is load twice as much stuff. Right?
But the point is, theoretically, is if you can get all of that data into that scene, this is why I find it interesting, because I agree with you. Like, if you've got more resources, people will use them.
Yes. Right?
And there'll be greater levels of abstraction, right? Like, people aren't writing shit in assembly anymore, right? People are writing in high-level languages, and there's all these levels of conversion that need to happen.
I think in games they are.
I don't think they're writing games in assembly.
I think for some of the super performance stuff, they are.
I mean,
the Unreal people might be, but I doubt
yes.
it.
Yes, no, that's what I meant. The Unreal
people. Oh, the game engine people? Yeah, I'm talking about game developers. But arguably, if you can get to a point where you can pull in that level of quality and you can load things in real time, then theoretically, you wouldn't necessarily ever hit that unless you're bringing in more assets into that view than the console can obviously display in that particular view because of the processing needs.
Well,
this is why I find it interesting.
I understand what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. This plays into something that I think, but it may just be because I'm not very discerning, right? So I'm interested in your opinion on this. There was a tip over point, I don't know, about 10 years ago, probably, where I went, okay, games now look basically realistic. They're not photorealistic in that I'm not ever unsure whether it's a computer-generated image or a film, right?
Right.
And despite all of the amazing technology that's happened, that has still not changed. But as far as I can tell, that's not a graphics issue. It's an uncanny valley issue, right?
Right.
It's about being good enough at graphics modeling, not about being good enough at graphics display technology. I mean, the graphics display technology I have can display a film perfectly fine, right? And it has been, and it has been able to for nearly 100 years. This is not a question of fidelity of the graphics technologies, that we can't make things that look enough like humans. But if you take a human out of the picture and it's just a picture of something, then yeah, you can make something which is photorealistic. I can't tell the difference, in the same way that watching a Hollywood film, if you go and watch Avengers Endgame, apart from the fact that you go, well, that's obviously not real because it's A, a bloke throwing magic, or B, a massive robot or whatever, I've got no idea what's real and what isn't. And
that's a good point. It's like when people watched the Twin Towers burning on 9/11, a lot of people were like, this doesn't look real. Because when do you see two towers?
I wonder where you were going
towers
with that. I'm like, no, don't do this.
Right. Oh, no. Like, it just doesn't look real because you don't see that in day-to-day life, right?
Yeah. So, as I say, the tip-over point for me was probably about 10 years ago where I went, okay, basically games look realistic enough now. Somewhere on the PS3, maybe.
Right.
So since then, yeah, the fact that you can now calculate ray tracing through all the individual raindrops, I'm sure is very clever. But because it hasn't made games look indistinguishable from films, and I'm not sure it ever will, but this hasn't materially improved that, is it actually making a difference other than just making games more expensive to develop?
Well, I remember people having exactly the same conversation when the PlayStation came out. Like, you got all of this additional horsepower to do these amazing 3D games. Do they actually make games better? And I don't know. I mean, I would argue
that's why I said the tip over. I mean, even, you know, looking back on Crash Bandicoot now, you're like, oh my God, it looks like it's made out of Lego. But even then, no one was going, wow. People were saying, wow, this is fantastic graphics by comparison with their Dreamcast. But they weren't going, wow, this is indistinguishable from a photograph.
Yeah.
But that point, I mean, you're a Battlefield fan, right? Do you find yourself when playing it, constantly pushed out of the experience by the fact that the graphics aren't real enough? It's not like playing Operation Wolf, right? It's basically real. It's a film at this point, right?
Wow.
Operation Wolf.
Yeah. There's a blast from the past for listeners as old as us.
That was an amazing game. Yeah. I was actually watching a video the other day of someone who bought and restored an Operation Wolf cabinet.
Wow, really?
Weirdly relevant. Yeah, I used to love that game. So anyway, I think that it's interesting, though, because you say that, because I think when you're playing the game, the realism, it's so fast-paced with a lot of these games that you don't notice it. It's really the people watching the people playing the games who really can enjoy the photorealism, right? Because when you're in the middle of a game, when you're playing Battlefield, you're not noticing, oh, I can see the tear on the side of the character. No, you're just like, I'm trying to get a headshot right now. I'm looking for shapes, not detail.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you're watching somebody on Twitch, then you're taking in all of the detail and the rest of it. Maybe that's part of the reason that's driving this, because people are watching people play video games so much.
That's interesting, because that suggests that in theory, and here's a business idea for you, there is a market for, oh my God, I've just realized something, but there's a market for someone playing the game on their existing hardware with their existing graphics, not having any of this new stuff. But then what you also do is you ship enough information about what they're doing, you know, where their moves were, what all the random number generators were, up to the server, where you re-render the game on your server farm with amazing 4K graphics, because you've got a million different graphics cards up there, and then stream that in real time. So the people watching you on Twitch get a fundamentally better graphics experience than you do actually playing it, but you get to play all the games on your existing machine without spending another £1,000 on a graphics card. Yeah, and then it made me think, is this what Stadia is? Or could be?
Oh.
See? Oh. That was the thought that I had halfway through that sentence.
Stadia. Remember that?
But yeah, look, I mean, so if your hypothesis is right, that the real consumers of all this fantastic photorealistic game graphics artwork are not you sitting playing the game, but the people watching you play the game on Twitch, then right. you don't really need to see it, right?
You know.
I don't know if I buy that, but
one thing that I am quite excited about is in the PS5, one of the technologies. So Mark Cerny, who's like the lead hardware technical architect, actually, I think our audience would be quite interested in this. He gave us, obviously because of COVID, right? The Game Developers Conference didn't happen.
Yeah.
And he gave a 1 hour long lecture on the technology that's gone into the PS5. And it's a really meaty technical talk, right? It's not designed for gamers. It's designed for developers. And I think people would enjoy checking it out. But one of the things he talks about is this new thing called Tempest Audio that they're building. And it's kind of similar to what I mentioned about that kind of convolution reverb thing where they're able to identify the specific reflections, audio reflections that are going on from a particular source. And apparently, I forget what it's called, but we all have kind of the equivalent of a fingerprint for how we listen to things. And he shows a picture of this machine where it can generate it for you, right? So you can go in there and it'll generate the exact model for your particular set of ears and how you listen to things. So they got the model for Mark Cerny and then they use their technology attuned to that specific model. And he said, and I believe him, that it completely changed the game because audio is so phenomenally important to movies and everything that it was like, The level of immersion was incredible. So they've invested a lot into this, and they're talking through various ideas of how do you get the same basic audio fingerprint for, you know, somebody else without having one of these massive machines that you have to sit inside of, because obviously that's not going to work.
That's really interesting, because one of the things that I thought when we were while I've been researching stuff around this, is that, yeah, new graphics card technology comes out every 5 minutes and each thing's a material improvement over the previous one. It can do more stuff and so on. But audio card technology basically hasn't changed since the Sound Blaster, right? I mean, a few other things have gone in there, but it's not like there's been... And I didn't know whether that was because it's sorted now. It can play all the sounds that you want, so no problem. Again, it can, you know, it can play all the sounds you'd ever need because it's not like it needs to be better at sound.
Right.
And once you've got a sound, it's pre-rendered. So that's fantastic. But maybe this is an example of audio card technology starting to get on the same treadmill that video card technology is. Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know.
I think it's interesting because I think the thing with graphics is, the graphics can sell a console because you can see the change, right? With audio, you can't necessarily hear that if you watch something on YouTube. It's in the same way, it's hard to kind of get a sense of how VR works because you can't show that in a screenshot, right? You've got to kind of put the headset on and get a sense of how it works.
So
I just think it's cool that we're seeing all these changes. Now, the big question is this going to make much of a difference, of course? Because we always hear these announcements, and then further down the line, you actually start seeing them in the market. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I think that plays into exactly what Jeremy said, that, yeah, 5 years from now, I'm sure there'll be a game which is actually doing all the stuff which is in this demo. But this is what they did in the Unreal 4 demo, and it's what they did in every previous demo. It's always a big step above what it was before. Everyone goes, wow, games will be better. Eventually, they are better. But are the games actually more fun to play? For me, as I say, it hit the tipping point at about 2010. Since then, graphics improvements have not significantly improved my experience.
Well, you kind of look at, I think, Xbox with Microsoft and Sony with PlayStation have taken one angle on this, and they think yes, and I think Nintendo thinks no. Great IP and really good gameplay is what makes games fun, and substantially less good graphics.
Yeah, and that plays into the distinction between huge studios and indie creators, because obviously an indie creator can't do this kind of thing because making a modern AAA game costs $300 million. But then you look at something like Undertale, comes out, shed loads of people buy it. And it's not making play on the graphics at all. It's all about gameplay.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that games have definitely got better in the last 10 years. But I don't know whether that's because of the technology or that's just because, like any art form, it evolves, right? Like, you know... It's like anything, you know, people try new things, they're different designs, different approaches. The science around games is constantly growing. So I don't know. I mean, there's no doubt that the technology will open up new avenues, like certainly with things like open world games, right? They can become more expansive. But I actually think that the games getting better is probably more due to the ingenuity and the creativity of game designers than anything to do with the technology.
I definitely, definitely concur with that.
So anyway, so we are going to talk in our next show about the exclusivity thing, because it does quite map quite well to this as well. So, but I would like to know from our Bad Voltage communitar, are you going to get a PS5? What did you think of the Unreal Engine? Do you think it's going to manifest like this in the future? I'd be definitely interested to hear that. So,
yes, so pop along to our Slack channel and let us know.
Go and hang out. And is there anything else we need to talk about with this or anything else?
Nope. I think we're good.
I don't believe so.
I would like to say thank you to Marius from NerdZoom Media, who is mixing the show again. Did a great job last time.
Yep.
Did a fabulous job. Marius, thank you very much. And Marius not only did this show, but he also did my Conversations with Bacon podcast as well. So he's a lovely, helpful guy.
You are a slacker. That's
you know what I do? I invest my time not editing the show.
What you do.
I invest my time in not editing the show into feeding the children.
Whose children?
Well, one child.
I can say you've only got one child. I thought this is news. You didn't mention
feeding the world language.
Yes. So pop along to the Slack channel, tell us what you think about Unreal Engine, whether you're gonna buy a PS5, whether you're gonna buy the new Xbox. Just get a gaming PC like sensible people. And other than that,
We'll see you on the next one.